Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Charles Venator Santiago, who's a professor of Latino politics, public law, and political theory, who holds a joint appointment with the Department of Political Science and the Institute of Puerto Rican and Latin American Studies at the University of Connecticut. Welcome to Background Briefing, Charles Venator Santiago.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Charles. And let me begin with you and your family in Puerto Rico. How are they faring in the aftermath of this tremendous hurricane?
So I haven't been able to speak to half of my relatives, particularly my aunts. They're out of communication. My mother's apartment, a fourth-floor apartment in a condominium, was flooded, and she's really scared and anxious. So I'm actually traveling this weekend to pick her up and bring her to the United States until electricity is restored or there's a little semblance of normalcy in the island. But things are very difficult. Transportation is difficult, and there's no access to basic necessities yet.
And the governor, Ricardo Rossello, predicted a long period of recovery. The infrastructure has been obviously has not had sufficient investment for some time, but the electrical infrastructure is down. It may take up to a month. That in itself is pretty shocking, isn't it, that we all depend so much on electricity?
So electricity and water off. In terms of the electric grid, it's been down, it's been on and off for about a year now, and they haven't had the resources to invest or create a new grid. So part of what's going on is that air gave it a jolt and knocked it down, and now this Maria, Hurricane Maria, that basically devastated the cables on top of putting pressure on the electric grid. So part of the problem is there's a lot of down cables and now a lot of down electric poles. So they're talking anywhere from 1 month to 3 months or maybe more without electricity.
So if there hasn't been sufficient investment in the electric grid over the years, where would this influx of investment money needed to just patch up the situation now, temporary measure even, as opposed to do the much-needed investment that has been postponed?
So there are three problems going on. First is that because Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory, Congress has the power to discriminate in terms of how much infrastructure investment is willing to finance in the island, or how much investment or funding is extended to Puerto Rico. So once this is once Puerto Rico is sort of moving out of this situation, it's going to have to assume responsibility over developing a new grid. And given the financial crisis, it just doesn't have the funding. The second is really around the question of FEMA, whether the FEMA money or the debt or the hurricane relief money that's coming from the federal government will incorporate the possibility of building a new grid and update it, more modern grid. And given the experience of New Jersey, it's not clear that Republicans are going to support the idea of not just fixing what's broken, but also using additional money to address the infrastructure problems that Puerto Rico cannot resolve. The third point that's really important to emphasize is that when Congress passed the PROMESA law, the fiscal responsibility law, last summer, within the first two paragraphs, it stated that it was unwilling to assume full faith and credit over the debt of Puerto Rico or the island's finances. So that suggests that unless Congress is willing to negotiate with the Financial Review Board or Control Board, there's no money coming to address these issues. So the push has been to privatize the electric company as a way to get external investors to essentially build a new grid, a more modern grid that can address some of the challenges of island living.
Well, at least President Trump seems to be aware of it. He said today, their electric grid is destroyed. It wasn't in good shape to start off with, but their electrical grid is totally destroyed and so many other things. We're going to start with very great gusto, he said, but it's very, very, very perilous shape. Very sad what happened to Puerto Rico. Now, obviously, it's a little hard to follow the president at the best of times, but beyond rhetoric, you know, I mean, isn't there a sort of competition now, a compassion fatigue competition? You've got the repairs from Harvey in Texas and repairs from Irma in Florida, and now you've got Puerto Rico. So where would you put Puerto Rico in the queue there?
So Florida and Texas have two senators each and a whole lot of representatives each. Puerto Rico has no representation in Congress other than an ineffective resident commissioner who has no voice or vote in Congress other than some committee participation. So part of the challenge is that Puerto Rico doesn't have the same political pull in Congress. And second, because Puerto Rico is on the Financial Control Board created by Congress, there might be an opportunity if the Financial Control Board manages to persuade Congress, but it's not clear that Congress is compassionate enough or has the same level of compassion. And the Supreme Court authorizes Congress to discriminate against Puerto Rico on financial matters.
Explain that. That seems extraordinary.
So when Puerto Rico was acquired in 1898, the military and Congress invented a new territorial status in order, known as the unincorporated territory, in order to protect Congress from being bound by past territorial precedents. And the first thing that the legislation did is they decided to treat Puerto Rico as a foreign territory in a domestic or constitutional sense. And the Supreme Court affirmed that. Since then, all the way up to last summer, Congress has the power to enact discriminatory legislation when it comes to federal funds or federal aid. Congress is not bound to treat Puerto Rico or extend parity to U.S. citizens living in Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico is considered to be a foreign territory in a domestic or constitutional sense. So legally speaking, constitutionally speaking, as late as last summer, 2016, the United States Congress has the legal authority to enact legislation that can discriminate, that can extend some funding or withhold funding from Puerto Rico. So in other words, right now, any funding that goes to Puerto Rico is really up to Congress and the goodwill of Republicans.
Well, they haven't been exhibiting a lot of goodwill lately. This latest healthcare bill that they're trying to push through is cruel and unusual punishment, even though...
And that's the problem in Puerto Rico, that we can't expect much from this Congress, even though the president is making all these rhetorical statements.
So what will it take then, Charles? What will it take?
For a different Congress, is my guess. Or somehow a way to find some sort of strategic benefit for helping Puerto Rico. Because with PROMESA, even though Congress assumes some responsibility to govern, to manage the fiscal crisis in Puerto Rico, it also assumes, or it also states, bound or required to address all the shortcomings of Puerto Rico. So part of it is going to depend on whether the Financial Control Board is going to demand and whether Congress is going to work with the Financial Control Board. But the measures that the Financial Control Board has been, have been taking are based on austerity. So we don't, you know, unless Puerto Rico somehow can influence the commercial standing of the United States or has some sort of impact, it's not clear that Congress is going to make an investment, a multi-billion dollar investment, to fix the grid in Puerto Rico. It might open up for a bid.
Well, there's some talk of privatizing. I mean, apparently the person that has oversight over in the Congress is Representative Rob Bishop, a Republican of Utah, who's tied in with the energy sector. What's your sense, just in closing, about whether there's going to be some kind of privatized deal? I don't know who's going to pay for that. I mean, in terms of ratepayers, they're obviously not, they don't have electricity now, and it's going to take a month or so, apparently. So you're starting with a pretty low baseline in terms of income in Puerto Rico to begin with, aren't you?
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity for advocates of privatization to push for the creation of a private grid. And this has been in the workings. This is just an opportunity that enables Rob Bishop and some conservative elites in Puerto Rico who've been wanting to privatize the grid and also to push for alternative sources of energy, like the gas viaduct. I think this is what's likely to happen. And they might get some subsidies from Congress, but Puerto Ricans will end up paying really high rates, electric rates, per kilowatt hour. But yeah, I think that's my suspicion, that we're going to see more privatization and even the construction of private grids.
Right. Well, in other words, this Republican Congress would be happy to give money to subsidize a energy company, but not take care of the Puerto Rican people. So,
or U.S. citizens of Puerto Rico.
Right, right. So that seems to be the way it's likely to happen. Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Charles Venator Santiago.
Anytime.
Appreciate it. And again, I'll be speaking with Charles Venator Santiago, who's a professor of Latino politics, public law, and political theory, who holds a joint appointment with the Department of Political Science and the Institute of Puerto Rican and Latin American Studies at the University of Connecticut. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into whether Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, was a Kremlin asset and an important part of an overall Russian intelligence operation.